Your first job then for Williams was what?
It was a non-job. They were trying to figure out what to do with me. They knew they wanted to get somebody in that level, but there really wasn't a job that they hired me to, so I was the assistant to the vice president of operations at Williams Pipeline.
And what did that entail?
They had to think long and hard to find things. I had a small office that looked out over the fire escape on the Kennedy Building. Then they bought a pipeline that had belonged to Gulf Oil Company that went from essentially Missouri to Illinois. And we still owned Agrochemical at the time. And they had the big liquid nitrogen fertilizer plant at Port of Catoosa. So we rehabbed that initially to carry ammonia-based fertilizer up to the farm belt. And that was one of the projects I worked on, but as I say, what turned out to be fortunate from my perspective was that my boss at the time had a gallbladder attack and took time off because they did a lot more major surgical incision in those days than they do today. And he decided he liked the time off so much that he just retired. And so I ended up getting an unexpected jump to being vice president of operations. Then I had a real job.
Okay. And so much of this just is the luck of the draw, isn't it?
Well, it's you know, real serendipity, and it truly is. I mean, I would have been in the Marine Corps, actually, had I not weighed 250 pounds. Because when I had my two bad training reviews in Spokane, it's not a direct shot to get from Spokane, Ponca City to Spokane. And you took the puddle jumper from Ponca City to Kansas City, and then you took planes. I spent the night in Kansas City. And I was, you know, feeling sorry for myself, very, very put upon, and I wandered into a Marine Corps recruiting office. And the sergeant in there, when I told him that I'd taken the officer candidate's test on campus, because I had a fraternity brother that was taking the test because he wanted to go into the Navy. And I said, well, I'll just go in. They'll probably let me take it too. And I took it and ended up having a really, really good grade on it with no intention of going beyond that. But I told him, and he was able to access that, and his eyes lit up. And he said, well, man, we'd put you in officer candidate school right now. And I got most of the paperwork done. And he said, oh, there's one thing we got to do. What's that? We need to weigh you. Why? Well, because if you weigh over 230 pounds, I can't put you there. You have to go in as an enlisted man. And so I knew at that point, it's kind of another one of those deals. At some point in one of those interviews, you know you're not going to have life turn out the way you were expecting it to. And it didn't, because I weighed 250, and they couldn't convince me that if I went in as an enlisted man at Camp Lejeune, that I probably would weigh 230 by the time I got through basic training. And they would then automatically move me up to officer candidate school.
Oh, that's what they were telling you could do. You could lose weight by going through basic training.
Sure.
And then you could become, and you didn't.
Well, there was no guarantee. Right. I believe the part about losing the weight.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I went through basic training at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, and you know yes. What that area is about.
Yes. Oh, well, that's where most of the Rolla guys went, because it was Corps of Engineer base.
Right. So in 64 and all, that was, Vietnam was on, obviously,
right.
And that's what, so weren't they after you, the draft board after you?
It was not, and again, it goes back to small towns. That they had begun to do, I think they started giving you draft numbers at that point or shortly thereafter, but in small towns, draft boards have quotas, and most small towns in those days would get a kid that might be going to reform school, and they give them an option, that this will, you know, make a man out of you and straighten you up and make a real citizen out of you. And they could fill their quota that way, along with people that wanted to do it. And it was a career choice for them or an economic choice.
Yeah.
And so that, and then President Kennedy put in a waiver for people with children. Mm-hmm. That was there for a while.
So you become Williams Pipeline Vice President of Operations.
Yes.
And again, that was because your boss
decided to retire because he'd had some surgery and found out that he liked playing golf better than he liked working.
Okay, so then when you went on to Williams Pipeline Executive Vice President, who got sick then?
Well, that was a job they made up.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, well, I went to the Harvard program.
Oh.
And that was 14 weeks, so they, for 14 weeks, they're not going to leave a job open, so they had moved Roy Wilkins in behind me to do that. And so when I came back, they had to find a place for me. So they made me Executive Vice President of the pipeline, and so everybody reported to me, and I reported to the president. So it was kind of a non-job. It was the kind that, when I had more sway over organization charts, I probably would have put a highlighter through it, because it just somebody talking, helping this person talk to this person, and that's a non-job. So I
were you frustrated that you didn't have enough to do, or?
Well, I tend to get antsy if there's not substance in what I'm doing. And but again, that fairly quickly changed, because shortly after that we bought Northwest Energy, and I became president of the pipeline because my boss had moved up to be an executive vice president of the parent company.
And who was that?
And Vernon Jones. And then I added, in addition to Williams Pipeline, I added the role of president of what was then Northwest Central, but it was the Old City Service Gas Pipeline that was headquartered in Oklahoma City.